of moving target today. We are hoping to have Bill DeWitt the Third on in a few minutes, possibly a Nuck as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to let Wheeler handle most of it. I'll ask a couple of Dave questions, but, you know, don't want to annoy them on his first day in a new job.
Yeah, with a new title, yeah.
What kind of socks do you like?
That'd be great.
What's your favorite cookie? Do you like Palomar?
That gave me a question, though. nothing wrong with that.
What is your view on the Malamar industry?
Right. So you're rich. You've had Malamars. You ever had a pinwheel? You ever slum it?
Let me introduce you to my friend, the pinwheel.
People are all about me wearing the collared shirt.
Yeah.
I had a golf lesson today with my new best friend, Ed Curtis. And, he's taken me under his wing, and we went out to Forest Park and played for, hit balls for about an hour. And, turns out I didn't even need a collared shirt.
No, not to the driving range, not so much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know.
Yeah.
I'd never been there. There's, like, the Forest Park course.
I'm guessing at the Highlands. Forest Park course, you can also probably just play with a t-shirt.
Yeah.
A lot of public courses.
I certainly did.
Yeah. A lot of public courses, it's going to be that way.
Yeah. Jacob says, ask him if he can get rid of the City Connect jerseys or make them less ugly. Jacob, that's my favorite jersey.
He just started a battle with the DGS.
I love that look.
You do, yeah?
I know it was like cool to hate them, but man, there's some bad ones out there. I thought ours was pretty good.
I didn't really think there was anything hateable about it.
I like the solid red with the white pants.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't have to be that jersey in particular, and I like the baby blues.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they're all pretty damn good.
Yeah, they're not bad.
It's partly, I think, because it's an old franchise. You know, I think a lot of the old franchises have what I would think of as the best uniforms. Cardinals, Dodgers, Yankees. But I think maybe it's just that. It's because it's so classic and it's so tried and true that it's hard to not like it.
Yeah.
But, modern game, you gotta have different looks. You got to have different things because younger fans get excited about stuff like that. Got to have it for everybody, not just old stodgy people.
Sorry, I'm texting with Matt Pauly about important radio decisions.
Sure, yeah.
Right now. So.
Right.
Got to be able to do it all. Got to handle it all
at once.
Two
things at once, baby.
That's right. Maybe three. Who knows? So, yeah, we'll hopefully talk to Bill DeWitt III, maybe a Nuck. And how far are you going to go back with those guys?
With Bill III, since I got here.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been around. He's been a part of the organization since I got here in 06. I don't know Anouk as well. I've met him, but I haven't had much direct
confrontation,
but no direct contact.
I haven't confronted
really
him yet.
My contact tends to be more on the baseball side. It just does.
Yeah.
The people that I talk to, the people that I interact with the most, but no, that's not, but with ownership and with Bill III, I mean, you've done a million things with those guys.
I tend to see Bill III around a lot.
Yeah. No, he absolutely, one of the main presences at the ballpark,
mm-hmm,
and in spring training and everything else. I mean, it was interesting to me, this was not a super shocking development, like the way that they're doing this. But I think the interesting thing is Bill III kind of just describing a little bit more of getting in more involved and more having more time with the baseball side of the business as opposed to the business side of the business. Right. Because every sports franchise, I know they're all overseen by a chairman, by an owner, which in this case is Bill Jr. And this is probably more prep for Bill III to get, to be in that role down the road. I don't know that they're going to put it that way, but it sure feels that way because he's been in the business side for, 20 plus years, 25 years, and doing more on the baseball side, as he kind of joked about. I must be an attentive listener, something like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's going to be spending more time with that, and with Anouk in charge of the business, that frees up the time for the third to do that.
Yeah.
So
what would you expect, being a baseball guy, if you were counseling Bill DeWitt III, who wants to become more involved in the baseball side? What advice would you give him? Like, you want to know more about the baseball side? I would pay attention to this.
Just hang out with Haim. maybe move into the office next to him. No, he's got that too, right? I mean, it's not like he's been uninvolved. He and Bill Jr. and before Haim, it was Mo. They all are together all the time. They talk all the time. The plans that you see unfold in front of you whether it's, you know, the trade market, the draft, the direction of the team in a given year. It was always all of them together making the plan, and whatever you see is the result of what all of them decide. It's never one of them. It's never only junior or the third. It's always typically those two guys with the baseball leadership.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, the business side of it has been under Bill the Third's watch for all these years.
In a nuck, how well do you know him?
Not as well as I know the other guys. I mean, he's only been around a couple of years.
You haven't confronted him yet.
I haven't had any confrontation with him yet. Maybe we can change that tomorrow. But no, he's so on the business side, you tend to have influence over everything, right? Marketing, ticket sales, the broadcast teams, things along those lines. And he seems like a great dude. I mean, he's very sharp. He came in a couple years ago, and he's been a big part of how they've tried to change some of the experience at the ballpark to do things like the family section, to adapt on the fly, to have the tarps off section, to have the Friday Night Live that they're talking about, to try to change the vibe so that people can get what they want out of coming to a ball game. Because every one of us that goes to a game wants something a little bit different.
It's very
right?
true.
Like, I want just nothing but nuts and bolts. I'm there for the game. I don't really care where I sit. I don't care about drink specials. I don't care about concerts. I don't care about fireworks. I'm just there for that.
Yeah, you're fun.
I know. And there are a lot of people like that, but then there are others that are just looking to be entertained. And they're trying to do that so that everyone can get the experience that they want out of going to the ballpark. I'm going!
Mr. DeWitt III and a Nuck on the show here in the next few minutes, but it's a moving target. You know, they just did a big press conference, and they will be doing it from the KMOX studio at the ballpark with Matt Pauly. So we're just kind of waiting to hear when they're going to be on. So we'll keep it baseball. You know, it's always awkward. You try to get a new topic started, then you have to stop it. So let's talk about the game last night.
Yeah, I mean, last night was not the greatest. They got a nice little comeback there at the very end and almost got the job done. What we saw a little bit of last night was certainly a tough offensive day, which is not that shocking. You know, so far in the month of June, the offense has been phenomenal, so you're not going to be phenomenal every night. But then you saw late kind of the penalty that teams pay when starting pitchers for several days don't go deep into games. Because what happened late in the game yesterday, you have a nothing-nothing game going into the last inning, and all of your main relievers are down, right? Jojo Romero's down. Riley O'Brien's down. You know, Ryan Stanek probably down. You know, a lot of the guys, George Soriano, down. There are a lot of guys you count on in those close games where the outcome is in question were not available because they were heavily used over the weekend with the short starts in Kansas City. So this is what we, you know, what Matt and Bernie and Tom and Ron and all of us are talking about a lot when we're talking about the rotation. And you saw it even last night with Leahy being really good.
Yeah.
You know, he got into the seventh inning. He was really good. Even with that, you don't have coverage because of the previous handful of days, which is why we talk so much about that, which is why we've been talking about Matthew Liberatore, because he's had a lot of short starts. And these things do end up with a tax at the end of the day. It may not be the day it happens. It might not be the next day, but eventually you kind of end up with a short bullpen and you have to go with who you have. And the guys you don't have for that day, you can't just throw everybody out there 3, 4, 5 days in a row because then you burn them out and they're down for weeks or months. So it's a tough little thing to battle. And that's why we focus so much on the starting pitchers and the, you know, getting quality out of them and getting at least somewhat deep into games on a regular basis.
This is probably a really stupid question, but a lot of people have to wonder this, knowing that, you know, Nolan Ryan threw 200 pitches and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Humans used to be able to do that. It always seems to me that the relievers are babied too much. Like, why can't they throw 2 or 3 innings every this many days?
Most of it's about training, right? So if you think about how you're trained in any sport, if you don't train, like, just say, for example, you're just a regular CrossFitter. You're in amazing shape. You're super strong. You're flexible. But you don't train for the bench press. You're not going to be able to throw 300 pounds on the bench and move it because you're not training for that. And that's kind of what happens in all sports, but especially we're talking baseball here. They're not trained to do that. They're not trained to rein it in and throw at 80 to 90% effort most of the time. they're dialed in relievers now. It's all gas, no brakes every time you're out there. And the more you do that, the more it limits the how often you can work without getting hurt. And what's changed from the days that, you know, we have our buddy Scott Terry on all the time and talks about, you know, having a 4 or 5 man bullpen. And those guys would do that. They would throw 2 or 3 innings, maybe get a day off, and then do it again, and then do it again. Or they would pitch every day, 1 inning at a time. Well, they were trained to do it, but they were also trained to pitch in a different way than guys are now. So you, as a sprinter, think about doing a sprint full speed. And so let's say the task today is you've got to complete 10 100-meter runs, each of them under a certain time. Let's say you're a sub-11, you're a sub-10. Let's say they got to all be under 10 seconds. If you space those out and you have an hour to run those 10, your performance is going to be better than if you put them close together and you got to do them all in 10 minutes. See what I'm saying?
I do.
So that amount of exertion, that amount of effort leads to fatigue. And if you don't get proper rest, then that will lead to injuries eventually. And that's where the changes have come in. We understand more that there are injuries, and the sport has chosen a riskier path when it comes to max effort pitching because it's also more effective.
See, I think I'm making the mistake of I can throw 18 pitches then I could come back tomorrow and throw 18 more pitches. You know, just like,
well, let me tell you this, go on a mound. And I'm not telling you, I'm talking about, you know, anybody out there. You get out on a mound, make 30 warm up throws so that you're fully warmed up and you're ready to go. And then throw 20 pitches with as maximum effort, as hard as you can throw them. And then tell me how you feel the next day. Mm-hmm. Now, you're not training for it. You're going to feel worse than they do. But it's the same principle. And they're also doing this while throwing bullpen sessions, playing long toss every single day to make sure that their arm stays in shape. They're running a ton. They're in the gym working out. And it's also partly like we understand the science of this more, where in previous generations, we just didn't know. It's like, all right, well, he says he's good, let him go. Well, now we say, I don't care if he says he's good. We know that the body needs recovery. Just like we know so much more about how important sleep is than we did in previous generations, right? I mean, you know, you hear all the old legends, well, they were out all night. Guys don't do that now because they know that sleep is a big deal for recovery and injury prevention. And the more knowledge we have of those things, the more it impacts the way players are used.
Are we losing even the concept of the middle reliever?
Oh, no, they're all like the emphasis on relievers has never been greater.
Because that seems so important. Like what Dobbins did for us.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
A week or so.
Having the long reliever is definitely a little bit more of a luxury. And it sounds like Matt Pauley is ready for us to bring him into the mix from the ballpark. Because he's there with Bill. It sounds like he's there with Bill DeWitt III. Matt, are you with us?
You, Bill DeWitt III, the brand new CEO of the Cardinals here as well. Anuk Kurunturante should be joining us here in just a moment. But as mentioned, Bill is here. And Bill, first and foremost, congratulations on what is a very cool day for this organization and also for your family.
Yeah, thanks. It's been a fun day, exciting, and really looking forward to the team we have and what it means for the future.
Bill, this is Dave Glover. We've yet to meet in person, although I have seen you awkwardly in public many times and been weird about not saying hello. So either you're like, there's some bald guy tracking me. That's me.
Okay.
I'm going to let Matt and Kevin Wheeler do most of this interview since they know what they're talking about. But on behalf of myself and the audience, congratulations. And here's to another 30, 40 years with you.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been hard to believe it's been 30 and this is our 31st, but hopefully many more to come.
Fantastic. Kev, take it over.
Bill, first of all, congrats. I know you're hearing that a lot today, but it won't get old, so congratulations. It's a very cool thing. I thought it was really interesting listening to you describe what's changing for you in this, because obviously as these titles shift, duties shift. So explain again a little bit how you see this working for you in the short term, and obviously that desire to even get more involved on the baseball side as you've been with the business side for all these years.
Yeah, so I think it's been kind of an evolution over the last, 18 years in my role as team president, but maybe more so in the last 3 or 4 where, a lot of the strategic decisions on the baseball side, I had a seat at the table. And on the business side, you know, I had worked my way up through that. So I kind of knew who everybody was and what their opinions were coming into things like decisions making on the business side. On the baseball side, I was getting things sort of after they had already been baked, so mm-hmm. to speak, whether it was a trade deadline thing or something in the off season or how the draft might play out. But I'd look forward to doing a little bit more of a deep dive into the baseball organization so that when those decisions come, while they'll still, of course, be collaborative, there'll just be more context there mm-hmm. and you'll understand where people are coming from and what their roles are so that, you know, you just have a full picture when you're thinking through those things.
Bill, I think it's interesting how you guys have always, whether it's been privately, you know, in regular conversations off the air or on the air in front of microphones, talked about the way that you do things as a group. And I don't just mean you and the family. I'm talking about you, your dad, Mo, before he left, Haim now. Maybe describe a little bit deeper, if you can, for our listeners and for Cardinals fans, the group nature of all of these big decisions, because obviously it's not one person simply saying, let's do this. I know that one person, the chairman, Bill DeWitt Jr., has the hammer if he wants it, but I know that you guys always talk everything through.
That's right. And I think that's been a key part of how we've made decisions. And, you know, I mentioned that I think in other organizations, the chairman, control partner, if you will, sometimes overrules, you know, decision-making mm-hmm. recommendations a lot, you know. My father hasn't done that much. He has on occasion, as I think it's important to do, you know. Otherwise, maybe you aren't expressing your full opinion in that role. But it's always been very collaborative. And when a big decision happens, you know, it isn't just, you know, me and my dad necessarily, or me and my dad and Mo or Haim. There might be 5 or 6 or 7 people in the room because you're, you know, ultimately Haim has to rely on a big staff of people to serve up decisions too. Mm-hmm. And if there's something that needs more research or somebody's opinion isn't fully fleshed out, I think that's how I view my role, is to make sure that those things are all fleshed out, all the information is on the table, and then we can hopefully come to a consensus on something, and you're not overruling anything. You're just, you know, putting that stamp on something that we're all sort of agreeing on.
Bill, is this a good time to kind of be jumping in more on the baseball operation, just in the sense that with what Haim has brought in, there's been a lot of changes and a lot of new stuff, and the whole organization is kind of learning it together at the same time, if that makes sense?
Yeah, it is. I mean, there are a lot of new faces. And Haim, I think, was great that he was had been with two other organizations, because while we were, I think, pretty up there, considered industry standard on a lot of things, you know, eventually people start doing things a little differently in other places that work. And so having his perspective like that was healthy for us and will continue to be. But yeah, I mean, in terms of the timing of where we are right now, more people in the room than ever. And I think it's just that much more important that we sort of know where people are coming from, what their source of truth is related to information, and that we work through decisions together so that everybody can feel like they've had their say. Now, you're always going to have disagreement. You want that. You want people disagreeing about certain things. It means that people have strongly held opinions and have done their homework and feel a certain way. But at the end of the day, you want to hear it all from everybody first.
Bill, you and Kevin and I are around the same age. We've been watching, playing baseball for our whole life. You're in a pretty unique situation, though, the view that you have had the last few decades working with your family. Can you just kind of take that wherever you want, whether it's as a front office guy or even as a fan, how the past 20, 30 years have evolved and what you've seen the changes in baseball?
Yeah, I would say looking back, I don't look back wistfully very often, but this is kind of a moment where that's appropriate. And the one thing that it strikes me is just how much the game has changed and the industry has changed in those 30 years. The fundamental game is the same, but, you know, gosh, I mean, when we first got here, I think our revenues were like 70 million, something like that, 70 or 80 million.
That's a one-year contract for Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's Ohtani, you know. So obviously the growth, the organization has grown to support more revenues and stuff, but so has the industry itself evolved. You know, teams have gotten more sophisticated. I feel like we were pretty much on the leading edge of that for quite a period of time. Other teams have gotten very professional, very sophisticated. The industry has experienced that growth that we talked about. The economics have changed as a result of it. Some of the disparities have grown. We'll be trying to deal with that in this next CBA. The game itself, I feel like, has gone from pretty close to what I remembered as a kid in, and then sort of getting involved 30 years ago, mm-hmm. it didn't feel like it was that much different, to, you know, the analytics revolution changing the nature of the game very noticeably. And I'm really proud of the industry, which is not usually open to that much change, for having worked its way through these changes on the field, all of which I've supported and feel great about, some more than others, of course, but the pitch clock in particular, the ABS this year, I just feel like they are taking us into the next generation of fans and making sure that the product on the field is really good. And I feel good about that part of the change as well.
It's interesting, Bill, you mentioned that analytical change, that, you know, a lot of this relates to the prevalence in these last 30 years, the growth of technology and the technological impact on all sports, but since we're talking baseball here, specifically baseball, and that has meant a lot more challenges for all teams trying to figure out, all right, we got to find different ways to appeal to fans. And boy, are we seeing that now. We were talking about the ballpark experience and how you guys have been working to shift some things around to make it so that everybody has the experience that they want. The nerd like me gets the nerdy baseball stuff, and the kids get a little bit of fun. And now the tarps off section too. How important is that to continue to seek those ways to appeal to each fan on their terms?
That's very important. And that's one of the things that Nook preached day one when he got here. He's like, we need to really think about the different demographics that we're serving and then have an offering for them that's more specific and tailored to what they want. And so you do that market research, you understand the different groups that are coming to Cardinals baseball, and you have to do some simplifying assumptions a little bit because, you know, 3 million fans, there's 3 million opinions, but there are some patterns that do play out pretty consistently. You know, the Friday Night Live thing has been really cool for young professionals and people that are looking to have a good time. And Family Sundays is an example of a different demo where we're really catering to what they might want to do on Sunday, bringing value to the table. You know, our Coca-Cola section promotion where everybody, you know, for $30 they get all you can eat. It's pretty funny. That went viral. And we're seeing how people choose to try to beat the house when things are free like that. It's pretty funny. But and then when you have something organic happen, like the tarps off section, really thinking hard about, okay, how do we have this become really fun, maybe get bigger, and just put a little bit of our thinking into it and not mess with it too much. I think that was a nice insight that we had there. Let it be organic and don't try to own it. Let it be a fan thing. And I think that's been a comment you've heard from Anouk and others. The fans need to be at the center of everything. And we don't need to be the end-all, be-all solution to anything. We just need to listen to them and kind of go with where they're going.
How much are you looking forward to? And I know your dad is still very involved, final decision, things like that. But it's 2:15 in the afternoon on July 31st. It's trade deadline day, and Heim comes to you and says, we've got a great opportunity. And, oh, by the way, it's going to push payroll a little bit more. How are you looking forward to those type of conversations and being even more involved in those type of baseball decisions?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of those things that makes this business so exciting is that there are moments in time where you know, like, the stakes are high. And obviously there's a lot of money flying around, and you have to look at things through that lens to a certain degree. But when you mix it with all the baseball stuff and what we're trying to achieve, I think if your goals are clear, those decisions get a little easier because you're like, okay, is this consistent with our long-term plan? And if the answer is yes, you know, the answer is probably going to be yes. Mm-hmm. If it's not, you're going to really labor over the decision if you're going to say yes, if that makes sense.
Bill, I thought one of the most interesting things that came up from you guys during the press conference was when someone asked about the trade deadline. And, of course, you know we here at KMOX and Sports Department, we're going to be talking about it months ahead of time. And you guys said, you know, it's only about a week until we really start getting active. And I'm curious, what other things do we not understand? Like, you guys you guys live and die.
This could be a long answer, man.
No, I like asking these big ones. Like, you guys, anytime the team has a slump, it's like, oh, the DeWitts are this and they're not that, and why don't they understand this and that? Give us a little look behind the curtain, what it's like to be a DeWitt going through the season.
Boy, that's a good one. I kind of know what you mean in the sense that, and I appreciate the tone of the question, which is like, we don't often see everything going on behind the scenes, and so strongly held beliefs sometimes aren't based on knowledge of what's really happening.
Mm-hmm.
And when I see that from fans, I'm like, we love that passion, but you just probably don't understand this or that behind the scenes.
Yeah.
The trade deadline's one of them. Actually, when I said that, I kind of thought to myself, Himes Group's probably teeing up ideas for the trade deadline right now. But, you know, from an ownership standpoint, you're probably not going to dig deep into what options might be out there until about a week or so, you know? So it was more of a comment from an ownership perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, there's certain things that I'll give you another example of when that occurs is like when you read about a possible trade that somebody has dreamed up.
Yeah.
Right.
And they're like, this is what the Cardinals should do. And this is what X team should do. And they should do this trade. And here's why. And you're like, wow, that's a good analysis, except for the fact that you're not considering, you know, this other player makes $100 million and like we don't have the room for that or something. I'm making that up. But often there's things just missing. So it's very cool to see. And sometimes they're cool ideas. But I do sometimes think that classic baseball trades are the most fun. Mm-hmm. When money is not an object, let's mm-hmm. just say it's two young players
right.
or something, and you need a pitcher and they need a hitter, and you swap for those reasons. Those are fun because it almost feels like fans have a good feel for those because they don't necessarily need all that other background info. But that's an example of where fan input actually can play a role.
I love it. Yeah, that's exactly what I was looking for.
I'm sorry for sending all those ideas, Bill. I apologize.
That is Bill DeWitt, the third new chief executive officer for the Cardinals. Bill, thank you so much. We're going to transition to Anouk. I know you've got a lot going on, so we'll let you get out of here. But thank you so much for taking some time with us today. And again, congratulations.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Bill.
So with that, we'll welcome on to the show right now. He is Anouk Kurunaratne. He is now the president of business operations for the Cardinals. It wasn't that long ago that he was brought in, replacing Dan Farrell in a vice president role. And he's somebody who went to Wash U, was working with the Toronto Blue Jays. And Anouk, it's great to see you. And I love the story of you having a connection to St. Louis, being a Wash U guy. And now here, just a few years later, after joining the organization, you've got a really big role as with a president title. Congratulations, first off, and I'm sure you feel great about this.
Yeah, thank you. Certainly couldn't have predicted that it would play out this way. That's kind of the fun thing about how this works out. But incredible organization. I think we're at a juncture where there's an opportunity to really shape what the next two decades of Cardinal baseball can be. And, you know, Haim has articulated it and, you know, we're all on the same page on really being aligned on that ambition. And so it's exciting. You know, and certainly there's always a personal component of that when there's changes like this. But for me, even more than, you know, a personal accolade, I'm just excited to be, you know, involved in helping steward this amazing franchise.
Anouk, this is Dave Glover. We've yet to meet, but I'm going to turn you over to Kevin Wheeler here pretty quick. But I just wanted to say congratulations. I look forward to meeting you. as a fellow WashU grad, we should probably be best friends.
So you're getting hit up by the collections office too, I'm sure.
That's right.
All right.
That's right. I keep referring them to you.
Right. Yeah. Thank you.
Good, Kevin.
No, congratulations. Maybe it doesn't seem this way to you, and you can answer the question. Boy, it seems like it has to have been a whirlwind for you. You come to a new place. I know you had familiarity with the WashU connection, but a new team with a role that was really significant. And over these last 2 years, there's been a lot of change.
There has, yeah. I mean, it is, like I said, one of the compelling things about this opportunity was there's not a lot of franchises that are as iconic and significant as the Cardinals. And to join at a time when there's so many things that need to kind of get figured out and transition required from, you know, the ownership transition that was, announced today to, Haim coming in. Mo was planning on retiring. We need to renovate the stadium. There's a whole bunch of industry issues that are ongoing, from media to, labor to everything else. Like, it is a very, and then, the team performance mm-hmm. element of the Cardinals, like so many different things changing at the same time that was a challenge that was really exciting to me. I've always been someone that would rather be working on a challenging situation than, a simple and easy one. So it's really made sense for me.
I know there's still a lot that you guys want to accomplish, but is it rewarding knowing that we've seen attendance tick up a little bit? We've seen the TV situation get figured out. We've seen the gambling situation get figured out. There's still stuff to happen, but some of those big things, maybe not fully checked off, but you can see the check mark, kind of starting.
Yeah, I think we're making great progress. I wouldn't say it's rewarding. It kind of, in some places, reinforced what we thought we needed to do. And in other places, we've learned about changes we need to make to the new initiatives we've done. But this is very much a long-term approach, and it's rooted in really understanding and doing what we think our fans want, to see and hear and feel from the Cardinals. And that's going to be a process that evolves, and that mindset is applied to media. It's applied to the ballpark experience. It's really applied to every aspect of our business, and it's an iterative process. So, it's always great to celebrate those wins, but we still have a lot of work to do.
Anouk, are there things about the way the business ops work, or elements of it, and you don't have to get into the details, but are there things that maybe we wouldn't think of off the top of our head that would fall under that umbrella, or that would impact these game day experiences and things along those lines?
I'm sure there are. It is when you get under the hood, it's I was telling someone yesterday, once you work in the business side of sports and you see all of the different parts of the business organization, it's very hard to go to a game and see it the same way, because mm-hmm. you're thinking about the people in the control room running the scoreboard. There's like 30 people that sit in the scoreboard room to make the scoreboard work and to, put all the stats and the content on there. and that's just one example of, if you're just sitting there as a fan experiencing it, you're not thinking about who's choosing the song that is playing right now. How do they time the breaks on the scoreboard? You're thinking about the logistics and the operation of people in the ballpark and how they're flowing and how long the lines are and how friendly the ushers are or not. And that's just like game day operations.
Right.
And then there's everything from marketing, content creation, digital advertising, ways that we engage with our fans through social media or other owned and operated channels like that. There's ticket sales, there's sponsorship, there's broadcast media, there's the food and beverage business, there's a retail business, and then there's the whole back office operation of legal, finance, HR, IT, analytics. So there's a lot of different components to it. That's one of the things that makes it really fun and adds a lot of variety, to my day-to-day, because there's so many different things that are going on. And one of the things we're trying to do is really coordinate those things, because in the end, we've talked a lot about this, fans have one experience when they come to the ballpark, even though there's like 50 different touch points that are managed by different groups in our organization. And we really need to be coordinated, and we need to be in sync to deliver a cohesive experience to people.
Can you speak to the importance of being nimble? Like, let's talk about tarps off for a second, because that happens organically. And within a day, Ollie's buying out a couple sections. And then within 3 days, you guys are blowing out three sections where people have season tickets. So you got to reseat people. You got to make the decision that we're going to basically take these seats off the market and create this general admission area for people who want to come in and take their shirts off and go crazy. For all that to happen in a really short amount of times in reaction to something that happened organically, how important is just being nimble to your job and to just any successful organization?
Yeah, I think it's really important. I mean, that's something we've prioritized. and being nimble, meaning, you know, we're able to move quickly without compromising our standards of what experience we want to deliver or how we work together internally. You know, and to me, being nimble is we can stay coordinated and move quickly. And this was a really good example of that. It's something we've been working on. But it was everyone from stadium operations to the ticket sales group to the marketing and content groups and social media, like all of those different groups had to talk about what makes sense, figure out how to relocate tickets, move ushers to different sections, and you know, communicate a different standard of fan conduct than we, you know, typically see and expect at Busch Stadium. And being nimble is definitely important, because if you're not, you miss those opportunities.
Anouk, thank you so much for your time. Once again, congratulations. Look forward to meeting you in person soon. And all the best for, again, the continued success over the decades.
Thank you, guys. And look forward to seeing you in Seattle or in St. Louis whenever you guys are here.
A weird hour and a half, but you get a chance to talk to the new boss of the Cardinals. You do it. So that was cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'll be stable. This is a very stable group of people.
Seems like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're not going to see wild, radical changes that will upset you.
Yeah.
But you're going to see. I mean, I think what's interesting now is just how it all ties together, because the business side has, you know, has been working on its own thing, and they got their own challenges separate from the baseball side.
Yeah.
But then they do tie together when it comes to payroll.
Oh, I forgot to ask him the most important question.
What's that?
I wanted to get him to commit that I could have U-Man's job when U-Man dies. Because I know U-Man's never retiring.
So
I've been thinking about John passing.
Yeah.
What's that? Look, none of us will be prepared, but it's just important that I'm next in line. No, I would never get that job. That's a voice guy job.
It's a little harder than you think.
Oh, I think it's hard.
Yeah.
No, I trust.
I mean, I'm sure, you know, U-Man's got it nailed after all these years. I'm sure it's not hard to him.
Yeah.
But I had to do it one day, and I was like, oh boy.
A lot of moving parts.
Also, yeah, let's not say something really stupid in front of all these people who are looking at you. I say stupid things sometimes.
We all say stupid things now and then. Today is National Day of Joy.
Joy.
To the world.
Means whatever you want it to mean. Mm-hmm. Just go out and be joyous.
It's something the commentators bring up in tennis a lot. Is like, you can see the joy. Huh. The joy in their play. I'm like, okay. It just feels like they randomly settled on that word.
Yeah.
It's a little odd, but it's fine.
Yeah.
You want a couple of fun facts? Do we have time?
We have 40 seconds.
This will be our last weird segment. Well,
don't say that.
Unintentionally
don't
weird.
Don't make promises we can't keep.
Yeah, that's so true. I'll just tell you that the highest grossing actor of all time, so they were in movies that made the most amount of money, not who you think, Stan Lee.
Oh,
because of
sense.
His cameos in the Marvel movies.
Yep.
How about that?
That's pretty amazing.
So he wasn't personally paid the most. He was just in the highest.
You're in the movie, the highest grossing movies, yeah.
Yes.
Yep. Well, all of those movies make big money.
know it sounds funny, but I just can't stand the pain. Welcome back, DGS on KMOX. Girl, I'm leaving you tomorrow. Saw that my friend Sarah was on the stream, and she and her husband got married on the Dave Glover Show 14 years ago. And they were talking about doing a rededication of their vows on the show. Come on in. Come on in.
Today's their anniversary?
I'm not sure. Yeah, I guess it is. Yeah.
Happy anniversary.
Yeah, happy anniversary.
Yeah,
I remember it well. She's very sweet.
Yeah, I wasn't there, but she has sent like pictures on Twitter and stuff before. And very, very nice.
Very cool.
Really cool that like so much stuff like that has happened on the show.
I know. Isn't it great? Just
so many wonderful moments that like
absolutely
you'll never even be able to recall. Like, yes. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So many inside jokes and funny moments that it's like, yeah, right. Oh, right.
Yeah,
like banana time yesterday.
I hadn't thought of banana time in a very,
in a
long,
very
time.
Long time. And then it was like, man.
Yeah.
That was fun.
Couple of Trump things. Just to get them out of the way. Rachel, you're not going to be able to see the reflecting pool. They put fences up.
What?
Yeah, they put fences up around the reflecting pool.
Dude, this is late. I'm going to D.C. at the end of next month. Very, very excited. I was really looking forward to Lincoln Memorial and the reflecting pool. And I was like, all this nonsense was going on with it. But as of last week, I'm like, it'll be open in time for my trip.
And maybe it will. That's an eternity in Trump time.
What do the fences look like?
They're just big, tall, 10-foot fences, chain link fences.
I guess the point is not to people not see it. The point is for people to can't go to up to it.
Yeah, so keep the vandals away.
Okay.
Trump is quadrupling down on the vandals, cutting it up, and although he's changing his story. Because when he said there's a 350-foot slit down the middle, and people are like, then why are all these big chunks coming up on the side? And now he's changed it. He said, like, well, they made hundreds of cuts.
Yeah.
They are just, and all this stuff. He's threatening to sue ABC for covering the story, which you would think he would want everyone to cover the story so he can find the real killers like OJ. Right?
I mean,
like, if you really are trying to sell us that a bunch of vandals with pocket knives did this, and I heard a couple of pool experts on national media who are just taking this apart and talking about how the whole project was stupid. They did it the wrong way. You can't do this. You can't do that. X, Y, Z. Even if it's done correctly and you cut a slit right down the middle, it wouldn't affect it. So anyway, and July 4th is saved. The 250th anniversary party is saved. Added to the entertainment that night is Kash Patel's girlfriend, who is a country singer, and she is just lighting up the internet already, defending herself, saying, I got this gig on my own accord. It had nothing to do with my boyfriend.
Right.
I couldn't agree more.
Just like Jared and Ivanka got jobs in the White House because of their merit and not because of who their father was.
Man, once I learn that girl's name, I'm going to go download her album. Wait, she probably doesn't even have an album.
And you know what? Here's the thing. She could be great.
I doubt it.
She could be the second coming of Tammy Wynette, and I would just be like, you're a joke. 22% of men believe they could defeat a chimpanzee in a fist fight.
How many? What percentage?
22.
Those are 22% of men that will be dead once that fight starts. Because the rest of us are like, we're out of here. We're not doing this.
Crazy.
Yeah.
What is a fist fight?
Right.
With
like, I guess it just means no weapons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good.
So hand to hand.
No, your face will be ripped off. I don't think they really understand. Like, you see the cute little chimps in movies, and you're like, ha ha, they're cute. Those guys are tough, man.
Yeah.
They will literally tear you apart.
You ever
see
those guys that lose their hair?
Yeah.
They're just...
The chimps that, yeah, the ones that have alopecia.
Ripped.
Dude, they're nothing but muscle.
Yeah.
That's nothing. I mean, how do you think you swing through trees? You'd be strong as hell to do that stuff. Think about doing a pull-up and how hard that is. And those guys just do that for fun.
Think about if your feet were hands. what would you be able to accomplish?
Well, and also if you had like giant teeth.
Yeah.
Tear people's faces off.
Yikes. I was just thinking about, Rach, you're probably too young for this, but trust me, when you get to be my age, one of the greatest things in life, and I'm sure a lot of you out there listening get this and understand, one of the greatest things in life is when you have plans to do something and the other person cancels the plans. Mm. That's sweet. Because then you don't have to be the one who cancels it, but you don't have to go.
But what if you want to?
You're crazy talking.
And here's the thing.
No one wants to go to things.
I never want to go. Kevin, how many times are we hanging out after the show and I'm like, I got to do this thing tonight.
Yeah.
And I don't want to go. But I know once I go, I'm going
to have fun. Yeah.
And like 100% of the time, I'm having fun. Yeah. So I've just been kind of trying to remind myself of that recently when I'm like, I don't want to go. It's like, once I'm there, I'm going to be happy I'm there. It's just the anticipation that I dread, I guess.
There are things that you don't want to do. You know, I mean, like there are things like, I got to go do this thing. That's normal. But I mean, there are things you want to go to. Right?
I dread everything.
Really?
Yeah.
You dread going to the Cardinals games that you go to?
Sometimes.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's something that like, if it was on the schedule, you'd be like, I cannot wait. I can't wait.
Boy, it'd have to be pretty special. Hair transplant.
What about like dinner at an amazing restaurant?
Yeah, the easier the activity.
Okay.
It's not even the how great it is. It's more like what? How easy is it?
Yeah, how close so to
home? So if it's 10 minutes from home instead of 40 minutes from home.
Yeah.
It's different, right?
All bricks in the wall.
Yep.
Yeah.
I get you.
Only takes one bad brick, though, to send me over the edge.
I get it.
Also, going back to the reflecting pool, I may not have this exactly right, but I think I do. Evidently, Trump has given another no-bid contract to the same guy, Biff Stew. If you've seen this guy, oh my God, he looks like he's cosplaying something. Convicted felon. And I'm thinking, did we not get a warranty on this thing?
Yeah, does he not have to do the work for free to fix it?
But Trump let him out of that by saying it was vandals.
So he gets paid twice.
He gets paid twice.
We get to pay him twice.
Isn't it great when people just say things and don't, like, I don't know, prove what they're saying is real? That may be the biggest disease we have in the country right now.
Amen.
Is people can just say things and they don't have to back it up.
And it wasn't always that way, kids.
Mm.
You should be able to stop.
Like, if you got evidence
tracks.
Of that, why aren't the videos on the nightly news every night going, see, here are the vandals doing their thing at this reflecting pool?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's no chance that part of the city, that part of the Capitol, doesn't have cameras all over the place.
Yeah.
Plus, there's always people there. Hmm. And by the way, weren't we told when the new paint was going in that it was such durable paint? It's like you couldn't even cut it if you wanted to.
Do we still have the sound from yesterday of that?
350-foot gash proof paint.
Do we still have the sound from yesterday of when Trump was saying this will last 50 years, you can't even cut this with a knife?
I mean,
oh, sorry, he was potted down.
Oh, sorry.
is it number one, Andrew?
Number two.
This will last for at least 50 years, and you'll never have a leak. It's very strong. You couldn't, if you had a knife, I don't want to give anybody ideas.
If you had
a knife, you can't even cut it. So strong.
They cut it very violently. The same thing with the floor.
I was joking when I said that. You couldn't even put a 350.
No.
He said that.
I know.
That was like 3 days ago.
That's so funny. If
I could be there at
the
one
Titanic.
Of those,
you couldn't sink it if you tried.
If I could be there, I would sacrifice my whole career just to take my phone out when he says what he said. And like, here's what you just said 2 weeks ago,
and I
play
don't know
that.
Why people don't do that.
Well, I mean, obviously, if you do that, you're going to get run out.
Yeah,
you're going to lose your position, maybe lose your job,
go down in history.
Yeah, I mean, like, you literally just said you can't do the thing you're accusing people of doing.
Yeah.
And then not showing us the evidence that thing ever even happened to begin with, when everybody who knew the plans initially, said, hey, you know, this is probably going to happen because it's going to be darker. That'll attract more sun. That'll warm it up. And that's, you know, we already have problems with algae in the reflecting pool. That'll probably make it worse. Like, people said that in real time beforehand.
Yeah.
And then, you know, just pour paint thinner in there.
You know, it's interesting. The pool experts that I heard were saying, the hydrogen peroxide, it's not great. But if they did the job well, it should be impervious to those kind of chemicals. So they don't think that's what it was.
Oh.
They think that this cat just did a terrible job for $14 million.
I gotcha.
And that it was, if you had just fenced the thing in from the day they finished, everything that's happened would be happening. The algae would be there. The pieces will be breaking off because they didn't let it sit long enough. They didn't let it dry enough. They just did a bad job.
Okay. So it's almost then what happens when you give somebody a no-bid contract who probably shouldn't have gotten one?
Exactly.
Okay.
And I'm serious. Trump screwed us again by saying it was vandalism. Otherwise, I'm sure we had to have...
So now the United States taxpayer has to pay twice.
Yes. Yes. To the same guy.
To the penguin.
The guy that just demonstrated that he can't do the job that you're paying him to do. So.
Yeah. Ooh. That's why I'm easy.
Welcome back, guys. GGS on KMOX.
I'm easy.
GGS,
like
we like to be community minded, and anytime you guys have a fundraiser or something, you can reach out to Andrew, and we would love to get you on the show and tell people about it. Today we have Jessica Smythe, early childhood principal at Premier Charter School, talking about the Macklin Mile, which is going to be June 27th. Jessica, nice to meet you. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So let's just go right to it. Tell us about the Macklin Mile.
Yeah, the Macklin Mile is a really, really amazing event that is hosted right here in South City, St. Louis. It's a really family-friendly event. While they do have competitive races, they also have like a kids' dash, local vendors, music. It's just a really neat event for the community.
And what does it benefit? Who does it benefit?
So every year they are raising money for different organizations, and this year they are raising money for the Pettigrin Society. This is a nonprofit that helps cancer patients with just various supports that are free of charge, so medical supplies, nutritional supplements, transportation, things like that.
Very nice. And you guys at Premier Charter School have been a longtime sponsor. Tell us about Premier.
Yeah, this is our third year as a sponsor for them, and it's we have kind of gotten involved because we're located in South City, right at the top of a little bit of a hill, an incline. So our school is at the start of this event, and we are a charter school, a school of choice here in St. Louis. We are pre-K through eighth grade. It is a public school, so anyone with a St. Louis City zip code can apply to come to our school. And something kind of unique, we're a really big campus with about 20 acres right here in the heart of the city, which is pretty hard to find.
Very nice. Jessica, since I have you, I want to use you a little bit here.
Yeah.
As you know, because you see the media as well, everything's going to hell in a handbasket with education, and kids can't read, and they can't this, and they can't that. We know for sure it's not the kids. Kids haven't changed. Being on the ground in education, tell me your version. Tell me what's actually going on out there.
Yeah, well, I think that there are a lot of changes in the world, but one thing that has remained the same with PCS is our mission and our vision of this community involvement, hands-on learning, project-based learning, getting our kids involved in things well beyond the classroom, and that's where we see a lot of success with our students. We have these core values of respect, responsibility, and caring. We are a school of character. We really embody that, which is why we get involved in events like this. We want our kids to see, you know, we really teach the whole child. So academics are a big part of that, but being a valuable member of our community is just as important to us.
Excellent. I love that. I love that. So that's the Premier Charter School. The Macklin Mile is going to be June 27th. You can find it online at Macklin with a D, MacklinMile.com. Anything else we need to tell the people, Jessica?
No, we'd love to see you there. We'll have a tent set up at the end of the race. So come, even if you don't want to do the race, come to the event, check us out, come to our table if you have any questions or if you're interested in our school.
Excellent. Thank you, Jessica.
Thank you.
Bye. Appreciate it. I really have a heart for people who teach. I mean, God love you.
Mm-hmm.
They don't get paid nearly enough.
Well, no, it's also not an easy job.
Not at all.
Especially, too, when you hear so many stories. And I mean, I have so many family members that are teachers. So I you hear them directly, too, about having to buy some of your own supplies or whatever. Like, why?
Yeah.
What are we choosing to do that precludes us from having those things covered?
Yeah. I remember being younger before I had kids and the whole like, oh, people buy houses where there are good schools. That's boring. And then you mature and you grow up and you have kids. And especially now that my kids are grown, I see it even more. Like, we always wanted our kids to be in the best schools they could. And we, you know, private school and the whole bit. And it worked fine. They're great. You know, both thriving, college, the whole thing. But now looking back, I almost get a little chill up my spine. Like, thank God we were able to send them to good schools, because the deviation in their lives from having a bad education and a good education, you know what I'm saying? It's just, it's so absolutely critically important.
Yeah. I mean, when we moved here, we only looked at areas where schools had good reputations. That was our first filter. And then from there it was about, okay, does it have this kind of yard? Can it, you know, will our dogs be okay? What, like, but that was the first filter, and I'm sure it's the same for a lot of people moving. Mm-hmm. Especially if you're moving from out of town to a new place.
Mm-hmm. I'm easy like Sunday morning.
Friend Janelle is here. You can follow her on social media under Holy L, E-L-L-E. Do you guys already, I mean, I know we've talked about Supergirl. Did you see it yet?
I did see it.
Oh, okay. Can you talk about it?
I can.
All right. I know that look.
Do you want to?
I give it an F because she has pierced ears.
Yeah.
Well, now, let's wrong.
Here we go.
I understand it.
I do can understand. I yeah, like, I, yeah, being a nerd, I understand why, but go if you would like to go ahead.
I'll take a shot at it.
Okay,
because on Krypton they're not super beings, they're super beings here with our yellow sun.
Correct.
And back then you could pierce her ears because she was more what we would think of as human.
Well, yeah, like how this movie starts off is she's hanging around a red sun a lot at the beginning because she's wanting to get drunk a whole bunch. Because she's trying to still numb the pain from losing her parents. And so in order for her to be able to be normal, quote unquote, normal, human-like, as long as she stays away from a self-healing yellow sun, she can be hit, she can bleed, she can get holes poked in her, all that good stuff, as long as she stays away from the yellow sun. So, yeah. So, hate it for different reasons. I will give you plenty of reasons.
Okay. Okay.
When it was originally, when I first learned of the ear piercing problem, I had thought that it was people were mad at the actress for having pierced ears.
No, they were just dumb.
Well, they probably were.
There are plenty of, like, they can fix that in post if they so choose. Like, right. That's clearly the decision of, like, the people making the movie.
Yeah, plus I would guess even if, like, you're just a normal person playing a normal person, they will tell you what kind of earrings to wear for the scene and things
jewelry.
Like that. Right?
And
you're not
honesty,
just, like, showing up with what you want.
I don't even remember if she has them in the movie. Oh. And, like, now I can't even, like, I'll see it again, I'm sure, but it's... Yeah, no, it's a fine movie. The problem is you've already seen it four times. Mm. If you've seen all three Guardians of the Galaxy movies and you've seen Superman, you have seen Supergirl. It brings nothing to the table. It is not breaking any kind of ground. It ends up kind of being dull just because you have seen it before. Now, it's directed by Craig Gillespie and not written by James Gunn, but it feels like his fingerprints are all over this movie. It is, if anybody has seen the Guardians of the Galaxy movies and they deal with the Ravagers, it feels like you're dealing with the Ravagers version of this movie. it's, you know, oh, there's going to have the musical, the certain soundtrack hits in certain scenes like they do in the Guardians movies. And it's going to have the slow motion action scenes, and it has an ensemble cast. And it's just, you've seen this already. And it's just, it now it actually makes you appreciate Superman more than, you know, after seeing this, because there are a few scenes, I don't think this isn't a spoiler because David Cornsweet has been in the trailers. He does show up in the movie, and those are like, it's actually kind of a breath of fresh air. You're like, oh, let's kind of keep him around for a little bit, because he does a good, despite what you, I mean, like, it wasn't my favorite movie of last year, but he does a good Superman. I know, like, people want the rough and tumble, and it's like, that's not really how the character's written in the comics. He's kind of like a, oh, shucks, good old boy. And David Cornsweet does a good job of that. So when you see him, you're like, oh, like, and it's not to say that Millie Alcock is terrible in this movie. She does well with what she's given. It's just next to him, he does a better job of being Superman than she does being Supergirl. That's nothing to say about her and her acting abilities. She was in House of the Dragon. She was fine. But it's just an movie. We've seen it a bunch of times, and we've seen it better. You could take any one of those characters and put in Peter Quill, or you could take out somebody and put in Lex Luthor, and you have seen that movie several times. There are no, like, oh, gripping the edge of your seat stakes. There's no heavy emotional stakes that go on in this movie that you're like, I'm really upset about. Like, we know it's, again, they show this in the trailer, that the dog Crypto gets poisoned and she's got 3 days to be able to save him. Well, the dog is CGI, which for me as a dog lover, anytime a dog is hurt in a movie, I'm like, it's time to walk out. Like, I don't need to see this. I don't need this in my life. But it's hard to, like, yeah, I can't connect with a CGI dog. It's like, as much as it just doesn't work for me personally. But yeah, it's just.
Is it mostly about her arc? Or is it more about trouble on Earth and thank God Supergirl's here?
No, she's dealing with a younger girl who lost her family due to a group of villains in the movie. And she's kind of realizing her path of keeping everybody away and everybody at arm's length is keeping her safe emotionally instead of really connecting with the family that she's got as far as Superman goes. Yeah, it's just okay. It's like, the most compelling parts to me were the parts that they showed in flashback and dealing with the destruction of, now I don't want, it's not Krypton but at that time, because there was in the comics, this is not a spoiler, her and her family kind of break off from Krypton as it's exploding, and they go off to live for years and years and years, and that's where she's born. And because of the mineral kryptonite in that city, it starts to kill everybody, and her parents send her away to Earth. That was more compelling to me, seeing that, because we haven't seen that. It's like, how many times have we seen the spider bite Peter Parker? Yeah. 100 times. How many times have we seen Batman's parents die? 100 times. Even baby Superman coming to Earth, we've seen it 100 times. So, like, seeing this in a different superhero as far as, like, their origin story, like, that was neat, and that was probably the most interesting. And the rest of it was just, It was just,
What's your favorite Superman movie of all time?
Oh, 1978, Christopher Reeve's Superman. That's it. Just to me, nothing will. That I was 2 when that came out, and that solidified for me the direction as far as comic reading. And yeah, I had a Superman poster in my room that had a little couch next to that wall, and I would sit there and read books to him.
Aww.
Yeah. So that was it. It'll always be it. Yeah.
I've never figured it out. Why is it so hard to make a good Superman movie? Because it's been try after try after try, and some of them have been tolerable, but it should be more than tolerable. Like, we've made great Spider-Man movies. We've made great Batman movies. Obviously, you know, Marvel's its own thing.
Because Superman's not a really compelling character when he's indestructible. Like, you have Thor, who's indestructible, but Thor is kind of... you know, or maybe, but like, he has depth to him, you know, there, he deals with him, you know, self-hate and feeling important and ego and stuff like, and just Superman doesn't have any of that. It's the same way as you have to add in characters around Captain America in order to make him compelling, because him on his own, he's fine, but he needs something that's darker.
So too nice is too boring.
As far as superhero movies go, when they don't have any flaws, like when they're just always aw shucks and they always want to do the right thing. And even like his Clark Kent character, his other persona is a super good guy who sends money home to his mother. It's like, that's great, but it's, you know, it just wears thin. It's like everybody's always wanting to see a depth to a character, and he just doesn't have any. It doesn't make him a bad comic book character. It's just there's a reason people prefer Batman to Superman, I think, as far as like interesting and entertainment wise goes. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I mean, Spider-Man's even compelling because he's a kid who's dealing with being, you know, hiding his identity from everybody and how that affects his relationships and tears everything apart with everybody that he relates to and how it affects his everyday life. But yet then he's taking on these people who can crush, you know, normal humans. That makes him compelling. Even though he's a good kid, he still has that kind of complexity to him.
Okay. Going to take a quick break here. We'll be back with more with Janelle. Dave Murray is going to join us at 3:35. And Camo X 322. Janelle is with us. Dave Murray is next. Matt Pauly will join us at the top of the 4 o'clock hour, and 4:30 to 5, we are going to replay our interviews with Bill DeWitt III, who loved me, and Anouk,
who loved you as well.
Yeah,
fellow Wash U guy.
I felt like I had a good interview.
You guys bonded.
I got in, I got out, left them laughing. But no, I thought that was a really good interview.
Yeah,
because I'm just gonna be honest. When I listen to press conferences, I'm just like, boring, no one cares. Like, I want to know, like, real stuff.
Right.
You know, like, what's it like to be a DeWitt? People are, you know, dog cussing you all the time.
Yeah.
Blaming your family, like, you don't care enough. Like, what's that like? So, Janelle and I are having an interesting discussion.
Wait a minute.
About golf. No, nothing like that.
Yeah.
And I told her, you know, I'm taking golf lessons, and of course, my legend is to get super into things and spend a lot of money on it and then just give it all away because I'm on something new. And so that's probably going to happen. But Janelle is asking me, because I'm really improving in my golf game thanks to my buddy Ed, who's giving me lessons. And she said, are you really competitive? And I said, no. And I'd never thought of it before, but I'm competitive with every other sport.
Yeah, that was what surprised me, because I know, like I said, I have heard you playing the games on the radio before. And, and I mean, I've heard, you know, like your track and field and your soccer stories and you killing your kid almost.
Yes, yes.
So, that just surprised me that golf was, you know, separate from all that. That was somehow that you just don't, that button hasn't clicked.
Yeah, and maybe it will. But I think
maybe your blood doesn't get pumping the way.
Maybe.
It is a pretty chill activity.
Yeah. Yeah. And from the time I started playing, which other than kid playing was in law school, I've always played with really good people.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just right away was like, oh, okay, well, I see where I stand.
Right. Yeah. Right.
So
your competition was just not to be the worst.
Yeah, just not to be the worst. Yeah.
Nothing. It's why all of that is why I just don't even try on things like golf. Like I would get competitive about it if I did it, and I would be angry and I would be a problem, and I don't want to spend the time or money to get good enough to where I wouldn't do those things. So I just don't do it.
So Janelle, she avoids board games because she's
I don't. Yeah.
Do you, or do you just play them chill?
No, I play them chill. I don't get competitive at those things at all.
How do you not?
Oh, Uno. How does Uno not just...
None of it. I mean, the only thing I would get competitive over is if we're playing like poker for money. I'll be competitive in that setting because I want money.
Okay.
Yeah. But no, like in family games and family settings, I don't. If I go there, it's not good.
Oh, no, sure. I'm familiar.
We just didn't know you could stop yourself.
I mean, think of the argument.
Yeah, they're learning it's a choice.
In some ways, it is.
You're making a joke, but you're we're like...
I'm not making a joke. you see it when I argue. That's what it is. That's what it turns into, and I don't want that to be unpleasant. The case in people, like when we're at Thanksgiving and everybody's after dinner and playing board games.
When you eat on free parking, that means you get all of the money in the middle of the board.
Yeah.
Everyone knows that.
Glad to know we're not in that protected group of people.
I mean,
I gotta protect people from my temper.
You guys kind of are.
What?
You are getting a filtered version of the real thing.
Are you serious?
Oh, dude.
Probably only because he has to watch his language.
Well, not just that.
You want to keep your job.
You get pretty ramped, my friend.
I mean, I know, but am I like, when I do those things,
yeah,
am I breaking things or am I punching someone?
Because
in a real competitive environment, like...
like, we are at work.
No, so. I know. This is my point. This is why I don't get to that. Because when I'm competing...
fired.
Let me give you this advice.
When I'm competing, it's intense.
Never represent yourself in an HR.
Oh, no, no, no.
Because you're not good at it.
No, I'm not trying to be good at it.
Am I punching people?
Telling you. That's the edge. That's the competitive edge. That's what I have to do to be as competitive as I want to be when I'm in that environment. I've got to be in fight mode.
What? Real question. When you are at your worst,
mm-hmm.
what are you feeling in your body?
Probably just red.
So you're just talking about like in when I was playing baseball seriously, like that. It's like I want to fight everybody.
Oh.
That's how I've played. I'm okay with fighting every person there if I had to try to win the game, to try to do what I need to do. Because I wasn't good enough to not be that way. I had to be that way to compete.
Fighting everybody?
Well, no, just like that's your mentality. That's how you. Oh, that's okay, how your body feels. Like when
you're in fight mode.
You're in
a
game.
Gotcha.
You're in a game. Got the gear on. You're competing. That's how it feels.
Okay. How does it feel in your body when it's 4:15 and sales says they need a FanDuel by 10 o'clock the next morning?
Well, not.
I've seen you go pretty crazy.
But it's not. You're seeing like a 20%.
Oh,
that's terrifying.
You're seeing 20%. You guys have seen maybe 75% max.
Do you play? So when you play video games, I know that.
Oh,
that's what I'm saying.
I'm bad at that.
Okay, so do you play like with other people, like across
online?
The country?
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes, but more often, no. More often, just me.
So
20% rates. That's what we're getting.
I don't know.
Well, for the FanDuel thing,
are we supposed to be like grateful?
No,
like, I don't understand
no.
What's happening.
There's no requirement of anyone of anything. I'm trying to gauge like
Thank
the
you,
level.
Kevin, for not punching us.
Yeah,
I could have hit you with the belt, but I didn't.
I mean, that's what it is.
The bar is kind of in hell, but that's okay.
It is. That's why I try not to do it. There are times I lose control of that. I don't want to.
I can't get past 20%.
Well, I mean, when you said the fan, like when you're talking about a late request, that's 20%.
Yeah.
So what's the most you've ever gotten here? Like, what would you say your highest percentage is?
75, 80.
On air.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, like back in the break room with Andrew.
I've had a couple of 90s like in the sports office by myself where the newsroom was like, are you okay? I'm like, yeah I'm fine now.
Yeah.
I'm fine now. 5 seconds ago, maybe not. Michael and Maria were like, oh no.
Can we do this after, Rach?
No, you can do it here.
Okay.
Spread the word and be like me.
Joins us courtesy of the Saliga Heating and Cooling Weather Center. Hello, Dave. Oh, Dave's muted.
He's not muted. He's up and he's on the Opal 2 is up and on.
Uh-oh.
Can't hear you, Dave.
Dave, could you be muted on
Yeah, he
your...
might be muted on his end because I'm not getting any levels from him.
Hmm.
Do I sound weird to you guys?
You sound fine.
Okay.
Do you feel weird?
Everything's weird in here. Things are weird.
No, it's like I'm getting like a weird like double.
Oh, you're getting feedback.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm not getting double, but the whole show, it sounded weird in my headphones.
Hmm. Yeah.
Awesome.
So what do we do with Dave?
It looks like he is trying something on his end.
Andrew's gonna call.
I'm getting buzz.
Something's going on.
Can he like act it out?
Yeah, can you mime it? Dave, can you mime
like
the weather?
Wind.
Just like
rain, wind.
I'm so hot.
It's gonna be hot. Like, well, gonna figure that out.
It's been the weirdest show. Yeah. I cannot.
Every time there's a goofy event, it can make things weird.
I cannot rally. I cannot come back from weird starts.
Yeah, but that wasn't you. You didn't make the audio go away.
No, but like the whole show's been kind of awkward and weird.
Is it?
Yeah.
Really?
From inside me.
Okay.
Okay.
Because I'm like,
I was going to say, most of it's been pretty good. I mean, like, you know, it was always good, but the first part was
like, great
like
to
a
be
weird
a part
change.
Of that. Thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
Dave Murray.
We got you, Dave.
Yeah, I got you.
Okay.
That's weird. I don't see anything weird on my end.
Interesting. I don't have any levels coming from you.
Yeah.
I would say we've had tons of weird tech stuff today, so yes. it's almost 100% on.
I wouldn't worry about it.
Yep. And it's in...
Okay, hang on.
Just indistinct.
What Rachel just said. Mm-hmm. How's that? Do you hear me now?
I'm so you hear me now? Levels. Let's try it again. Say one more thing.
Test.
Hey!
Okay.
Double makes it worked.
Yeah, turn that phone off.
Yeah.
Okay, mute him real quick.
That's really good feedback.
All right,
there
well, we
that
go.
Was good.
That's good.
Well, anyway, as I was saying,
good to know we can do that.
If you ever see Wheels come into the studio with a baseball bat, you know, run.
Yeah, Andrew, you missed that. Mm-hmm. So here's the salient point.
Yeah.
We were talking about Wheeler and his temper. And I was kind of flirting with, because I'm terrified of him, I was kind of flirting with, like, hey, we've seen
man.
That Timber Man. And he says we've only seen about 20%.
No, on the
he's like 80%.
Yeah, for the one commercial. For the commercial.
For that type of thing, the small inconvenience thing, that's a 20%.
He said on the radio it's
like
been
when
75,
I'm fighting,
80.
It's like 75%. Like when
and
we
you
get
really
into
don't
it.
Consider that to be like a huge problem
that's
in your
not
life?
What I'm saying. I never once said it was
yeah.
good
no,
or
he
bad.
He said it was yeah.
I'm said that's why I don't get
no,
competitive
I know.
About
I'm
non-competitive
saying, yeah,
things.
No, we're because, saying it's bad.
Yeah,
it's,
well, it's fine. It
value
just,
judgment.
It is what it is. I'm not trying to act that
don't
way.
Don't rile him up. You're in the other room.
I know.
Yeah. that's not that far to get over there.
HR will be knocking at the door.
We don't have... Please. That's part of the problem, Dave. We don't have that.
Don't have an HR.
I'm not a licensed psychologist, but I just noted something in his response where he... Andrew, his coworker, is saying, well, it's kind of a problem for us. And he goes, hey, it is what it is.
Yeah, we've got that's I've gotten that a lot from Kevin where I'm like, hey, let's work on this one specific part of you. And you're like, nah.
It's like telling somebody who's anxious to not be anxious. I can just tell you that, and
sure.
you're going to be like, well,
now that I understand.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah.
No.
I don't want it to
no.
be that
it's
way.
It's not like that at
no.
all.
It's not like I'm choosing it to be that way.
Yeah, but being anxious is not the same behavior as being having a terrible temper.
Yeah.
No, he's saying
no,
like
I
the
get
feeling
it, but
inside.
The feeling is not like, I'm not choosing it.
Gang,
not,
I just can't stop
no,
killing
you're choosing
people.
Choosing your response.
No, you don't. That's the point, is you don't always have the full, like, suit. Like, in a calm moment, I will make a calm decision. You don't do that when you're in that mind frame.
Who has ever seen you at 100?
You got to get control of your emotions, brother.
Oh,
what
no.
you're saying is I have no control over my emotions.
No, if there was no control, there would be broken crap everywhere, and I'd be in fights all the time around town, which never
yeah, this
happens.
This could turn into a great streaming moment here
like
any second now.
Like that, if there were no control, I would probably get in trouble. Like I'd be arrested. I would do things that would get me if I didn't have control of it to a level.
Like, I picture him like the Tasmanian devil, just spinning around just the streets of St. Louis.
I mean,
just taking
I picture
people
him
out.
Flipping cars like Godzilla.
Yeah, I'm just not buying it because if your behavior makes someone else uncomfortable, then it seems so easy to go, it could be so much worse. You guys are lucky.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying
you're
anybody's
saying you can't
lucky.
Control it.
I'm saying that, yeah, I can.
So this is you controlling it.
That's what I'm saying.
He's saying because he doesn't go to 100.
Yes. That's what I'm saying is there are times where it's...
Well, then it's an easy fix.
And it's
if you can control it, then just
it's like
turn
saying
the knob
there's
up
an
a little
easy
bit.
Fix for somebody that's got... To you know, change any behavior, whether it's eating, drinking, like it's saying, okay, just stop drinking alcohol. Well, some people have a problem, and you just don't choose to stop. Like you have to work on controlling it.
Yeah, but like the answer to being an alcoholic isn't, well, I'm an alcoholic forever. Like there are
right.
steps you can take, and
sure.
there are treatments,
absolutely,
there's best practices to do to like affect. And then ideally, you get into what's known as recovery, where you don't have these problems anymore.
Okay.
This whole show, including Bill DeWitt, has been an intervention.
I guess.
Whatever. I mean, like, if the worst thing is people get uncomfortable, I'm not.
You know. No, that's bad.
I'm not saying it's not bad.
If the worst thing is I scare my coworkers.
That's okay. I mean, if you guys, seriously.
Rach, go ahead.
I guess it's just, do you consider it a problem? Because it's like, I'm not really sure what we're arguing, or not, I'm not sure what we're discussing at this point, because we've come at it from so many different angles. Do you see it, like, when you compare it to alcoholism, like, do you see it as a problem in your life? Is it something you wish were different?
No. I mean, I don't, because what are the ultimate outcomes of the actions? Am I raging?
People don't like you.
But there are people that don't like everybody for various reasons. I don't even sweat that. I mean, there are people who are totally nice who other people don't like.
I guess what we have a problem with, and again, I don't want it to feel like we're like trying to back you
it's
into a corner.
Totally cool, man.
That's not what, at least that's not what I think we want to do. But it's what we, I think what we bump up
against. Yeah, right now.
Just you. Everyone is operating
it's
on
only
an individual
you,
basis.
Andrew.
I'm watching the Red Hulk over here.
Okay, then I'll talk to then I'll say it as an I, not a we. What I bump up against is that this is a me problem. It's in my own brain, but I don't like the idea that I would make another person uncomfortable. So it's weird to me. Like, what I bump up against is when you go like, well, if the worst thing that happens is you're not happy, I don't care. It's like, well, that's a weird way to look at it, right?
No, I mean, that's us being people pleasers, though. I mean, I think we tend to be like that, right?
Yeah. Maybe, I mean, there's like
a
maybe
middle
like
ground.
Yeah, maybe like I'm too far in one direction and Kevin's too far in the other. Like, I'm too much in
I'm too much. Come in here and hug, guys.
Well, no, I just mean like maybe I'm too much like, I don't want to make anyone uncomfortable. Right. And maybe he's too much like, I couldn't care less if me screaming and pounding the table upsets you.
If I couldn't care less, then I would never restrain myself. I would never try to stay out of those environments. I would not avoid the competitive thing that we started this whole conversation about.
Mm-hmm.
I do those things because it makes other people uncomfortable, but I don't always have perfect command of it. That's what I'm telling you.
Okay.
Like, this is what it is with effort. If it wasn't effort, it would be way worse, and that's the whole point.
Right.
Which is what's shocking us.
Well, I mean, it's...
Because you've never seen him at 100.
It's not that crazy. Like, picture it, put it in, the analogy would be the way the anxiety feels to you and hits you is the way anger hits me.
Mm-hmm.
I get it.
You don't want it. You're not trying to do it, but it's there, and you do your best to manage it, and you do your best to, like, not let it injure other people, get yourself in trouble, get yourself fired, all those things.
Mitch says, when it's Dave Murray time, we need to let Dave Murray preach. Mitch.
Yeah, let me address Mitch for a second here.
Here's Mitch. He pops in for 5 seconds here and there.
You and Greg need to go produce a radio show.
Mitch only shows up at 3:30.
Yeah,
he doesn't listen to the
podcast.
He's only here for Dave Murray. Earlier he gets on the stream and goes, oh, Janelle's here on Wednesday. What's going on? Is there a baseball game tomorrow? You know too much about the dang schedule, Mitch. You gotta chill.
Well, it's because it's all around 3:30. Yeah.
I will just say, I asked to be on today because tomorrow I'm leaving for Arizona.
There you go.
Now.
Getting as far into these things as we could possibly get, like, we're not even on the radio, and Mitch is going, well, why don't you don't let Dave Murray talk?
Well, I'm sure Dave would like to talk about the weather as well.
I'm enjoying this.
He was kind of digging it.
I kind of forgot Dave.
Dave's like, I found a new soap opera. These are the days of our lives.
I think it's important to talk about stuff like this.
Yeah.
And Kevin is maybe not on the radio, but it's important.
Oh, it's fine.
No, it's fine because Kevin's a mature enough guy that he can have this discussion.
Yeah.
He's clearly, to his credit, he's not getting like emotional or anything
or, like,
right now.
Or
and that's
anything.
Hard to do. I would be getting super defensive.
I'm not like bragging about any of it. Just it's the way it is.
Mm-hmm. Andrew, I'd recommend an escort to your car today.
No,
that's the point. I don't fear like any weird reprisal from Kevin because he doesn't get defensive about this stuff. He does a really great job with that.
Yeah, I think Joel makes a fair point in that he just commented. He said, I don't mind confrontation, and for most people, they avoid it like the plague.
Yeah.
It's the truth. I don't mind it. It's fine.
And you love confrontation.
I know. It's sometimes it's really
fun. I don't mean that as an insult.
No, it's fine.
Really
no, I agree. It's, either way, it's fine. I mean, it's okay. Right. Like, people get past it.
Do you?
Yeah. Well, I do.
Yeah, I know that.
This is my point. But like, so it's funny because it's always
first
totally...
hour, the first day, you're past it.
Yes. Yes.
Took us a couple years to ramp up. Here's the one I had to get used to.
Oh. The out of nowhere. Where did I see this? I saw this meme recently.
And
I wish
then
I saved
it's
it.
It's like, oh my God, what's wrong? You're like, I dropped my pencil.
Yeah. I forgot where I saw this meme. I sent it to Susan because she's with team you guys on all of this stuff. And but she's like laughing because it's true, but it's also like annoying. That I will get the maddest at the dumbest things, and then when really bad stuff happens, I'm calm, and I can handle it.
Yeah.
And I don't know what that is.
Psychopathy.
Like, if my video game glitches, I'm screaming and cursing and yelling, but, like, if something really bad happens, I'm calm and I can handle it.
It is nice to see you take the bad stuff in stride.
Which, what do you mean?
Like when, like you're saying, when something really bad happens, you take it a little more in stride.
Yeah.
He's like, what do you mean by that?
No, I wasn't sure, like, exactly what bad stuff
that's
we
the
meant.
Thing he gets defensive about after assaulting him for half
so,
an hour.
We're so late, but Vic needs to mow his lawn.
I know. Vic, do it now. There are a couple of spotty storms here and there. Right. Most of the stuff is well north or well south. However, we're going into a really wet stretch of weather with scattered showers and thunderstorms Thursday night, Friday night. There will be some very heavy rain at times, could be some flash flooding at times. It's not a severe weather outbreak, but these are going to be very efficient storms. Starts to fade on Saturday, then it's all about summertime. Sunday, 95 on Sunday. It will be a steam bath Sunday afternoon.
Mm. And tell Mitch he's pretty.
Mitch, I'm sorry if I was too mean.
Don't take it back.
I thought I was the mean one. Here, you guys are all burying Mitch. Of course, I joined in.
You're only seeing Rach at 8%.
Rach, let's see 50%.
Look
I'm
out.
Controlling it.
Let's see 50%, Rach.
Thank you, Dave.
All righty. You promised me you keep in touch. I read your letter and it hurt me so much. I said I'd never be angry with you.
It is past 4 p.m. Something's wrong with the studio.
Did you hear that go in and out for a second?
No, I just...
Because I heard something.
I can't hear myself at all when the music's playing.
Okay.
And I can barely hear myself. Yeah, it's just weird.
Something's weird.
Something's weird in here.
Well, there's a buzz.
Yeah, there's a buzz, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yay.
I mean, it's there, like...
Matt Pauly joins us. Matty at the ballpark.
I am. I couldn't hear you when the music was going either.
Oh, there you go.
Really?
So it's not just there. It's everywhere.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Could you hear him, Wheels?
That's similar to what he was describing. Like I heard what Dave heard. Yeah.
People should text in and say whether or not they could hear Dave when the music was playing.
I mean, I could hear you, but it was like,
yeah,
drowned.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
Maybe I was just playing the music too loud.
I don't know. You don't think you're doing anything like you don't normally do.
True.
Like today's different, and that's not what we're doing.
Yes,
that's true. Yeah, I have not done anything different.
I agree. Matt and Wheels and I interviewed Bill DeWitt III. And Anuk, who both got promotions today, and Steve Moore thought it was so good that we have edited it, and we're going to replay it from 4:30 to 5. And it was a very different interview, right? Like, three of us coming at it from three different places, and I thought he was very responsive and gave some really interesting answers. I think you'll enjoy it, so stick with us until 4:30 for that. We're going to talk a little bit of baseball, but then I think Matt sometimes likes not... talking baseball, I would if I were Matt. So we'll do a little bit of that. And one more thing, I just want to hold up my book right here. Rach, you can't read it from there, but will you confirm I'm pointing at something I wrote last night?
Yes.
And we just put Wheels through the ringer because of his temper sometimes around the office. Just so you know, we love you and that I love you more than they do. I wrote, Kevin Wheeler could be a national talent today. And I know you've done national stuff, and this isn't to say anything about Matt or Aki or anyone else. I was just thinking about you last night when I was doing my show prep. You could take any job at ESPN on any desk and be great at it.
I think a lot of people could. I'm not trying to be humble. I think a lot of people that are trained like we are could get those if they had the opportunity.
Interesting.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of talent in the country that just doesn't get that break.
I'd also add, I think we've seen a shift in the industry lately where local jobs have become more important, and we have seen more and more broadcasters leave national platforms to go to local platforms. Like, the impact of national sports radio is not what it used to be. It used to be, if you wanted to hear sports radio, you listen to the national stuff and they were talking about whatever. Well, now, if you're a Cardinal fan and you want to hear somebody talk about the Cardinals, you're not tuning in to national sports radio. You're putting a podcast on your phone and playing it through. So I think the media landscape has changed. Now, Mike Tirico is the voice of Sunday Night Football. You know, that's still a bigger job than any of us have, and there's a bunch of those out there. But I actually think a lot of the national jobs, kind of those second tier ones, are not as good as many local jobs now.
That's very interesting. Mm-hmm. Kev, tell us about the Athletic article about the 100 teams.
Yeah, so every year they do a poll of players. And eventually you'll get to them talking about which players are the best, who's overrated, who's underrated, who's the best teammate. Like, they get to a bunch of things. Well, the part of it that was released today was the part where they asked 100 major league players to respond to their poll. They got 100 players to do this. And the two things that were rated today that they put out were which organizations have bad reputations amongst the players and then which ones have good reputations amongst the players. That's the story from today.
Yeah.
Well, it is an interesting concept. I'm not exactly sure why, but I think it's kind of sad the way that it comes out, because it is in all the teams with bad reputations are teams that don't spend any money.
Okay.
It's the Rockies, the Pirates, the A's, the White Sox, the Angels, the Marlins, the Reds, the Royals. And actually, really, once you get past the Marlins, they're all basically the same. The Cardinals got 2 votes there, but that's the same as the Yankees. That's the same as the Brewers, right? And then when you look at the teams that have the best reputation, it's all the big spenders. It's the Dodgers, the Yankees, the Cubs. So it tells me that the only thing the players care about is money.
Not just salaries,
but like they want to be pampered. They want to have the best treatment for their families. They want to have the best travel and all this stuff. And I'm not saying that that's wrong, but I'm always disappointed that that's the main thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's about money first. And not about how smart is your manager. How smart is your team at putting together a team? Like, why are the Milwaukee Brewers only getting 7 votes for the teams with the best reputation when they win every year? It's not even about winning or losing. The Mets are getting more positive votes than the Milwaukee Brewers or the Tampa Bay Rays or the Cleveland Guardians. Those 3 teams win every year, and the Mets are an underachieving joke every year. But to the players, the only thing that seems to matter is how much ownership spends on them, whether it's salaries, family, travel, and whatever other things that come into spending money.
How did we do?
Well, the Cardinals are not mentioned on the positive one, and they're only mentioned briefly on the negative one. So I guess they would be neutral. Mm. They would be somewhere in the middle, which probably fits. Because they're not a team that doesn't spend. But they're also not a team that spends exorbitantly. Yeah. And it seems like the only criteria that matters in this question to the players is the money.
Yeah. Go ahead, Matt.
I would push back a little bit on what you were saying, Kevin. If I was a Major League Baseball player and somebody asked me about teams that have good reputations and teams that have bad reputations, I would want somebody to ask me a baseball question for me to evaluate the team on how good they are at winning and losing and things like that. When I hear reputation, I think about the way I am treated as a player. And a lot of times the teams that spend the most money are the ones who treat the players the best. If you're the Dodgers and you send 2 planes on every single flight, every single trip, because the players get to have their own plane and do all the, and all the things that kind of go along with those sort of stuff, that actually is what I'd be thinking of too.
Well, but I think it's kind of ridiculous in the sense that, well, of course they're the teams that spend the most because they have the highest revenue. It's New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, and Toronto. They're 4 of the biggest. They have the most money. So it's not like they should get credit for being in the market that they happen to be in, right?
But
you can't expect the Milwaukee Brewers to match the, you know, those types of treatments when you compare them to the Dodgers.
Okay, but you're not asking players to like take all that in. Considering the Dodgers are making this amount of money, are they pampering you enough? It's just a very raw sort of, this is what they can do, and the reasons for why they do it is not going to be considered when players are answering these questions.
And yeah, I feel like that's one of my complaints, is I wish the players would actually show that they care about something more than just how much money the owner can spend on their desires.
I don't know how you guys would know this, but do you think there's an element of it that the players from our childhoods, they were more romantic about the league than the modern players? Like, someone might want to come to St. Louis for the history and the romance of it, whereas today they might just look at it and go, they don't have the best, AAA team or something.
Yeah, I don't think it was different in the past. I'm sure it was very similar. Different scale, but I think it would be similar. The draw that the Cardinals always had was that they were good every year. Like, that's what you heard from free agents. That's what we heard from Sonny Gray. You know, you want to be here because winning's the expectation and winning's what they do. And that obviously the last handful of years changed, which is why the team went through the changes, because the way they're going to get back to that is to win more.
But also think about what Nolan Arenado, this is a great time to have this conversation with Arenado.
Yeah,
back
with him in town.
He has been talking so glowingly about what it was like to be a St. Louis Cardinal and the way he was treated by the fans, the way he was treated by the organization, everything that went along with that. That wasn't connected to winning. That was connected to his day-to-day life as a ball player and it being a pretty positive experience for him.
Right, and you would think, based on that, teams that do those things would show up on a poll like this instead of just the teams that spend the most money. You know what I mean? Like, the Cardinals have always had that reputation amongst their players that people get treated well. Now, there are unhappy ones. There always are. And then there are some that are happy here that are unhappy somewhere else. Like, but so it does vary a little bit. But the one thing that I have consistently heard for 20 years being here is how much people like the way that they're treated here. By the ownership, by the fans, being in the city, things like that. And when you get a poll like this, it doesn't reflect any of that for any of these markets. It is entirely broken down by who spends what.
Yeah, and the fact that the Cardinals are not listed on the good, you know, they didn't even get the cursory vote in there, that would back up very much what you're saying right now, Kevin.
Yeah.
Because I've never heard players leave here and talk about how awful it was. They might have had a bad experience from their playing, like Nolan Arenado did not play well, and I'm sure he didn't enjoy a lot of the people like us talking about what's wrong with him, but he never had a complaint about how he was generally treated by fans, by the team, or whatever. I've never heard that where people like, man, I couldn't wait to get out of there.
Yeah.
Where I've heard that about other places.
Yeah. Matt, I lied to you. We only talked about baseball.
That's okay.
It's a different kind of thing, though, right? It's not the same kind of baseball.
Yeah, a little bit breaking news real quick for you. Yeah. Mason Wynn, who is not in the lineup, a new lineup is coming. Wynn has been added to the lineup.
Oh, good.
Good.
So there you go. Breaking news.
Awesome. He's been swinging it well. It's good to see.
Excellent. Yep. Thank you, Matt.
You bet. We got a beat. We got a
good, good beat. We got a good beat. Welcome back, DGS 423. So earlier in the show, around 2 p.m., we had Bill DeWitt III, who just became the poopah today of Cardinals baseball and business, and Anouk, who also got a promotion on the business side, and me and Wheeler and Paulie interviewed them, and I thought it was really good, really interesting, very different perspectives coming from the three of us. And our boss thought it was good enough that we're going to replay that for you between 4:30 and 5. So if you haven't heard the news, Kev, just tell them what happened.
Yeah, essentially, it's the beginning of the process of Bill DeWitt Jr. kind of pulling back from day-to-day operations. He will still be the final say on big things. He will still be a part of all of the conversations about trade deadlines, budgets, things like that. But Bill DeWitt III is moving more into that type role, overseeing both business and baseball. And that's one of the things we talked about with him, which is, I thought, really interesting stuff that he'll get into about diving more into the baseball side, because he's been working the business. He's been in charge of the business side, which is a whole industry by itself.
Right.
So you don't really have time to do that. So this move allows him to dabble in both, to work with both directly to pick up more of the baseball side. And then Anuk Kurunaratne moves from a VP on the business side to the guy in charge of the business side, taking Bill DeWitt III's old role, which allows Bill DeWitt III to do the more broad work.
Okay.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
It's essentially part of the succession plan, right? They've been setting this up for a while. This is just kind of the move that moves in that direction. I wouldn't imagine fans are going to notice a big change, and certainly not right away.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So Bill DeWitt Jr. was the one who initially bought the Cardinals.
Well, he and his group, yes. They have an ownership group, right.
And but Bill Sr. was also involved in baseball, correct?
Back in the day. Yeah. Yeah. I think like way back in the day.
Yeah, like he met Babe Ruth.
Right.
Right.
Right, right.
That's pretty cool, though.
Yeah, no, their family is entrenched. I mean, Bill DeWitt Jr. was a bat boy, you know, but when he was a child, not recently. Yes, Eddie Goodell wore Bill DeWitt Jr.'s
Did you know that, Rach?
Jersey.
No, the little person that Branch Rickey
brought in for like back in the day when they would do weird stunts.
Yeah.
I think Eddie Goodell was something like 3'10" or something like that. And it was Bill DeWitt Jr.'s Bat Boy jersey that he wore.
Wow.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Might have been the whole uniform, but it was like, they have that long standing baseball connection here. And, you know, there's always rumors about them selling or whatever.
Yeah.
I wouldn't anticipate it. I mean, it's been the family business. They are really tied into it. And I think it was Bill III recently. I saw some comments from him. It's like, why can't Busch Stadium III be the next Fenway or Wrigley, the field that's around for 100 years, and it can be a landmark. It can be all these things. And that's part of why they want to do some renovations to it. They want to update it because you have to keep doing those things regularly.
Only about 30 seconds here, but you bring up something interesting. Will there ever be those stadiums again? Like things built in the last 20 years. Yeah. Are any of them going to be?
I mean, only if the owners choose it. I mean, you get new stadiums because new stadiums mean new revenue streams and usually means taxpayer money. But I liked hearing that. Why can't this be a 100-year stadium? If you do the upkeep, if you're updating it regularly, well, then you don't need a new stadium.
Yeah, that's coming up for you guys.